I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. Here we are, springtime's kicking off, and we're excited about all the good things that come along with this time of year in the Great Plains. I think we can all take a deep breath and feel so thankful that spring is finally here. However, Old Man Winter is still not letting go completely. We still have some harsh winters here every now and again, and I think our guest can attest to that now that I've heard a little story about her. But otherwise, everything's getting greener and spring is slowly getting a better footing. And we're super excited about what the season has in store. Rob, what have you been up to lately? Have you had a chance to take advantage of this nice weather?
Hey, Brittany, you know, this is a fast-paced and exciting time of year, that's for sure. Luckily, I have been able to get outside and take advantage of a few springtime activities. We're just kind of all in the sunrise of spring, right? But just last Sunday afternoon, I got out with my two young sons and a good friend and past podcast guest, Brandon Hines. If you remember, he did a turkey hunting with youth episode with us last spring. So if you're interested in that, go check it out. But we got together for some white bass fishing and had some success. We were throwing jigs into one of the feeder creeks of a nearby reservoir, and all the fish we cleaned, which I think were all the fish we caught, were male fish that were moved up into the creek as the water starts warm and they're pre-spawn. So depending on what the weather does here, hopefully we'll have some of the bigger females moving up into those tributaries, and hopefully we can get after that. So, you know, I do know that spring turkey season is right on top of us, and I am guessing that that's probably the top of your agenda over at Outdoor Mentors Pass It On.
Oh, yeah. We've been talking a lot of turkeys this past week or so. I think between a few of us just here in Kansas, we've got close to 20 youth season turkey hunts just this weekend. So it's pretty exciting because we still have another weekend after that to get more kids out who are 17 and under. So we're pretty excited about that. And Another shout out to Brandon. He's actually mentoring one of those hunts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, turkey season is always so exciting, I think, to introduce the outdoors to kids. It's actually how I got involved with Outdoor Mentors, was on a turkey hunt. And turkeys are just so goofy. I love their character. I love the mannerisms of them, and they're just really fun to watch. I just love it. And so when you get to experience that with a kiddo next to you, it's even better. And it gets me thinking about another pretty cool bird that we have here on the Great Plains and has a pretty fantastic, very whimsical spring breeding ritual. Prairie chickens all across the plains are booming strong right now. And for anyone who doesn't know what I mean by booming, I'm excited to introduce you today's guest, Dr. Jackie Augustine, the executive director of the Audubon of Kansas, who celebrates her passion for prairie chickens through the education and awareness. Jackie, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
If you don't mind, tell me a little bit about yourself, and then we can jump in talking all about prairie chickens and all things prairie chickens.
Yeah, I got my PhD at Kansas State studying what makes male prairie chickens sexy. One of the cool things about prairie chickens is that they have what we call a lek breeding system. So all the males gather around and display for the females, and the females choose one of them to mate with, and then they go off and raise the young on their own. And so my PhD encompassed what makes males sexy, because it seemed like all these females chose the same males, and they all didn't choose the same male. So over half the males I watched never got a female, whereas the other half got all of the females. So that was the topic of my PhD. And then, and that's when I fell in love with prairies and prairie chickens. And even though I spent a year in Minnesota and 11 years in Ohio as an associate professor of biology at a regional campus of Ohio State, I couldn't stop studying prairie chickens. And so in Minnesota, I studied the sharp-tailed grouse greater prairie chicken hybrid zone. And then when I got to Ohio State, I studied prairie chickens in eastern Kansas, initially looking at their vocalizations. And then for the past, you know, eight years, I was studying them in western Kansas at the greater lesser hybrid zone. And so after studying prairie chickens for so long, I, you know, obviously I loved studying them. I love what they do and what they mean for the prairies. And I was so excited to get the opportunity to become the executive director for Audubon of Kansas. I started January of last year, and now I am in the wonderful position of being able to talk to everyone about prairie chickens and get them excited about conserving prairie chickens in the state and throughout the Great Plains.
Jackie, you've got quite the CV, I guess you could call it, of different discussions you've had. I was so impressed, and I got caught up in all of the weeds reading through it. It's just incredible, your depth of knowledge for this. And I personally think the title of this episode has to be called "What Makes a Male Pretty or Male Prairie Chicken Sexy." I think that's just great. I love it.
So have you figured it out? Is it like cologne? Is it a haircut? You know?
Well, it's not cologne. Birds in general have poor senses of smell, but we're kind of learning otherwise where smell comes into play. But with prairie chickens, it was testosterone, which I guess could be smell. I'm not sure exactly how females are detecting testosterone. Mm-hmm. I think it's through some of their either display or aggressive behaviors that they exhibit. But females also like males with larger combs above their eye. So that fleshy area that's bright orange above their eye, they love that as if it's bigger and brighter. And then also, birds closer to the center of the display area or lek are more preferred than those at the periphery. So it took me, 5 years to figure that out.
Okay. So if 5 years to figure out, I mean, that's a lot, right? I mean, all those things that you're describing. But that, I guess that brings me to the question. And I know you answered it sort of in a roundabout way in your introduction, but why prairie chickens? You know, there are so many bird species out there, you know, from waterfowl to songbirds and gallinaceous birds to shorebirds. Was it happenstance? How did you land on prairie chickens, and how did they fill this spot for you that, you know, became your focus?
So it started out with birds generally. In college, my sophomore year, everybody was like, you have to take ornithology, that's the study of birds, with Doc Osborne. He's retiring this year. You got to take it. I was at Miami of Ohio at that time. And so I took that class my sophomore year, and I can distinctly remember going out for the field. One of the great parts of the class was all the labs were done outside. We would go to different places and look for different birds. And I remember one day we went to all these places and we learned and saw a song sparrow. And I'm like, oh, it's a cute little sparrow. It's got stripes. It's got a pretty song. I went back to my dorm that night, opened my window, and right outside was a song sparrow. You know, this bird that I'd never seen or realized was right there for me to see. And so that sparked in me a passion to see all the birds. And so I spent the next, 5 or 6 years just, trying to see all the birds. And then if you're a bird watcher, prairie chickens are kind of this elusive thing. They're only found in, parts of the country you wouldn't normally go. You know, the plains are known for their abundance of birds, but maybe not the diversity of different species. And so, these birds were out in the middle of the plains, and something really special about their breeding system and how all the males gather and display. And so they always kind of fascinated me. And then when I saw that there was an opening at Kansas State to study prairie chickens, I had to do it. And, you know, you start going out and catching these birds. I would put colored leg bands on them and release them and then watch them. And you'd get to know them as individuals. I remember the first bird I banded, I put all red leg bands on him and I called him Scarlet. And he was there during all 4 years of my PhD, which is quite a feat because most prairie chickens only live 2 years, you know, if they're lucky. And this one was there all 4 years and he never got a female. And so it was just great knowing these birds as individuals. And there's just something about the process of getting up and going out to see them while it's still dark. So to view prairie chickens in a blind, you have to get out way before sunrise. You have to get out and be in the blind an hour before sunrise. And at that time, you can usually see, you know, the part of the sky is starting to lighten. You know where the sun's going to come up, but you have to be in the blind at that time. And then the birds show up about a half an hour before sunrise. And at first, all you're seeing is these shapes move across. And then you hear them vocalize and you know, it's just kind of a thrilling thing to be so close to a wild bird and see them do what they do naturally. It really is something special. So hopefully you can understand why I'm drawn to these birds and what makes them special to me.
That's awesome. Very cool. Yeah. Great answer.
Yeah, I kind of sometimes feel like prairie chickens are a bit of a forgotten bird too, you know, serving kids in the outdoors. A lot of them kind of chuckle when I say prairie chicken, like, oh, are you like talking about chickens in the backyard? Like they don't really quite understand, especially, you know, if you're in South Central Kansas like we are. So it's fun to always share a little bit about them, but I can already tell we're going to learn so much more about prairie chickens than I know right now, which is really exciting. But I know like one, you know, big concern across the Great Plains with prairie chickens, especially concerning of the lesser prairie chickens. Let's visit a little bit about the different types of prairie chickens, their ranges, and what makes them so different from everybody else.
Yeah, it's remarkable. When I approach landowners and ask them to, you know, study the birds on their property, sometimes they don't even know they're there. And that's because, yeah, these prairie chickens are kind of elusive. You know, if you can only see them really between mid-March and mid-May when they're displaying, and they only display from a half an hour before sunrise to about 2 or 3 hours after. And so if you're not out in the right spot at the right time, you're not going to see these birds. And so, yeah, it's a And so I think they are kind of forgotten. Their breeding season is a little bit shifted compared to most birds that breed in the summer. And, you know, these guys are breeding in the spring. And yeah, so we have both greater and lesser prairie chickens in Kansas. And so there's actually three species in the Tympanoucus genus, the greater prairie chicken, the lesser prairie chicken, and the sharp-tailed grouse. And they have similar mating behaviors in that the males all gather in an area and display, and the females will come and mate with one and go off and raise the young on her own. But what makes these three species different is their display behaviors. And I think, I guess just a step back, it's also kind of an unfortunate name, prairie chicken. It sounds kind of goofy, like, yeah, something you should have for breakfast. But prairie chicken, really describes that it's a grouse of the prairie. And so, yeah, the two species are greater prairie chicken and lesser prairie chicken. The greater prairie chicken ranges as far north as North Dakota and Minnesota, as far south as Oklahoma, as far east. Well, they used to go to Ohio, but now they're pretty much cut off at Missouri. There are a few isolated populations in Illinois and Wisconsin. And as far west as to about the middle of Kansas and kind of slants northwest to into northeastern Colorado through Nebraska and up. So that's greater prairie chicken. Lesser prairie chickens are found in western Kansas, western Oklahoma, eastern, southeastern Colorado, northern Texas, and a little bit of New Mexico. The birds differ in size, and as you might have guessed, greater prairie chickens are bigger than lesser prairie chickens. They do have some subtle plumage differences. So greater prairie chickens are a little darker and lesser prairie chickens are a little lighter in color. But when you see them, especially if you see the males, their breeding behaviors are similar. They both start with foot stomping. They raise their tail straight up. They put these pinnae feathers behind their head straight up. They stomp their feet really fast, and then they emit this vocalization. Now, greater prairie chickens have a low vocalization, something like boom, boom, whereas lesser prairie chickens go pop, pop, pop. Lesser prairie chickens are also unique in that they have this really cool display where two males will display and coordinate their display. So one will go pop, and then the other one will go pop, and they'll go, you know, back and forth, pop, 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 pop. They'll do that a number of times, and they do it so fast, like, you know, multiple times within a second. And it's amazing that these two males can coordinate this display within, you know, fractions of a second. Sharp-tailed grouse also do foot stomping, but they put their wings straight out to the sides. They do put their tail up, and they have a pop vocalization, kind of like the lesser prairie chicken.
Cool. So these orange yellowish patches on the side of the head, I think that's, you know, when somebody sees a picture of a prairie chicken, that's what they recognize. And is that, I mean, I've heard all sorts of things, like it's an air bladder. It's, you know, I don't know what it is. How does that work?
Yeah, we generally call it an air sac. And yeah, okay. It inflates during display. And it helps project the vocalization, but it's not, I mean, they have a voice box in their throat, a little bit different than ours, but they have a voice box that makes a noise. But that inflation of these air sacs in their throat, they're just fleshy extensions that they can inflate, kind of like the throat on a frog or something. They inflate when they display and helps enunciate the sound that they make.
Interesting. So where I live out in the Flint Hills, there's a small lek that I see fairly frequently, maybe a mile to 2 miles from my house. And this time of year, if you know the leaves aren't on the trees yet, and I have heard that before at our house, that booming sound, and those birds have to be close to a mile away. And it, yeah. You know, the first time I heard it, I was like, what is that sound? Like, where is that coming from? And then I started to realize, because I'd seen them out in bean fields and out in pastures and things and booming. And I recognized it then. I was like, well, that's what I heard at the house. And anyway, pretty interesting that they can vocalize and I could hear it that far, because my ears aren't that great.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, when I started studying them in Western Kansas, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be able to hear the lesser prairie chickens that far because they have that little pop. But it's amazing. There's something about the stillness of the air in the morning and where they display. They generally display on tops of hills. And one of the reasons is that, again, we think they can project their vocalizations a very far distance from the top of the hill. And so, yeah, you can, on a calm morning, which is sometimes rare in Kansas in the Great Plains, but on a calm morning, you can hear greater or lesser prairie chickens from a mile away. And that's how I find new leks. I go on county roads and I just listen, and I, you know, drive a half a mile and listen again and see if it's in the same direction or a different direction, and try and zero in on which property that's on. But yeah, you can hear that from so far away.
Jackie, I'm curious, can you explain a lek? Because I'm sure so many people don't quite understand what that is. And I know I didn't when I first learned about prairie chickens.
Yeah, a lek is just the area where they display. And it's a Swedish word that means to dance. And so they do a lot of dancing and displaying, but they also do a lot of aggression and fighting on the lek. So the lek is just a term referring to the location where they display.
Gotcha. So is there a comparison maybe for listeners that are familiar with turkeys, you know, where they're strutting and drumming and gobbling and displaying? You know, you'll see sometimes, you know, in a large, an area that has a large turkey population, you might see 2, 3, 4 toms together trying to get that hen to pair with them. Is that a similar type situation?
Yeah, coming back from watching the prairie chickens this morning, I saw a bunch of turkeys and there were 2 groups of 2 toms each and trying to display. And so, yeah, there's some similarities in that you do have males kind of displaying together. But the difference is that turkeys do not display in one location. I think they kind of follow the females right around. Mm-hmm. So they don't have a lek. The other difference is kind of in numbers. And so, you know, turkeys, you said you've seen up to 4 males in a, we call them coalitions. Okay. Instead of a lek, whereas prairie chickens in the literature, if you look at historical literature, there were leks of up to 50, 60 birds. The most I've ever seen was 30. And I would say typical, typical is between 15 or so. If you get up to 20, that's a big lek. The other difference between prairie chickens and turkeys is that they've looked at the relatedness of male prairie chickens on a lek, and they're not very closely related. So it's not like it's a bunch of brothers. But in turkeys, they have found that brothers are more likely to display together than non-siblings. And so, yeah, so turkeys, you know, and it kind of makes sense then for them to work together because, you know, if your brother gets the female, you're still getting some indirect, you know, you're getting a nephew or a niece that situation. So, yeah.
So I can imagine the size of the leks you described and then the lack of, I guess it's called nepotism, where they're not related, the males. So if a male hatchling is raised up, a poultry, I don't know what the right term is, but then he's got to travel to a different lek to be able to breed or establish a new lek with other female offspring, or how does that work?
Well, in birds, it's usually the female that disperses away from where she grew up. And so the males kind of stay in the home territory, and in healthy prairie chicken populations, there's more than one lek within a mile of the nest site. So he's can disperse to whatever one he finds the most opportunity, I guess. But yeah, the females are the ones that will go farther than the males. And so that way they're not mating with their siblings.
Gotcha. Interesting. So Jackie, at least for me, I think the prairie chicken seems to be this like symbolic bird that can take on a lot of different forms depending on what your perspective is. So, you know, we've got this native upland bird that's in a considerable decline, at least in my area. If you talk to folks, oh, you know, the chicken hunting used to be so much better. I'm not too far from Cassidy, which was the prairie chicken capital of the world, you know, and now you go talk to people there and they're like, well, we don't hardly have chickens anymore. And I recently took my kids on a white-tailed deer hunt down in the Chautauqua Hills down by Longton, Kansas, and was talking to some ranchers and they're like, man, we used to have just, you know, big groups of prairie chickens would come in to feed fields. And now we just, you know, if you see a prairie chicken, you call your neighbor and tell them about it. So we've got that, you know, from this game bird perspective, and, you know, they're hunted still, and the greater prairie chickens at least, and, you know, I hunt them, I pursue them. But then some also consider the prairie chicken this sort of a bellwether or a canary mine bird for the prairie and the grassland health. And then at the same time, there's talk about, you know, the threatened and endangered species listing of the lesser prey chicken. If, you know, if we're there, there's discussions about that. So, you know, it's concerning as far as if they are truly a bellwether of the health of the prairie and they're in such a decline. So with this like complicated sauce of ingredients, can you help us to understand some of those dynamics?
Yeah, I mean, prairie chickens are in decline, both greater and lesser prairie chickens. And they're mirroring the trends that we're seeing in other grassland birds. I don't know if you saw the study that came out, but we've lost 3 billion individual birds in North America since 1970. And so that equates to about 1 in 4 birds overall. But if we look at grassland birds, we've lost 50% of, and not species, but 50% of individual grassland birds. And so we're not losing species yet, but we're losing individuals. And prairie chickens are kind of the token bird for that. And we often consider them to be what we call an umbrella species because they require different types of prairies. And so because of their diverse habitat requirements, they protect a lot of other grassland species as well. So they need that really short grass for displaying. Like you said, when you see pictures of them with their air sacs inflated, you can usually see their whole body, right? You don't have a lot of tall grass in between. So they need that really short grass so they can show off to the ladies. The ladies need really tall grass to lay their eggs and to protect their nests. I mean, and if you think about it, each egg, it takes 24 hours. So she lays one egg a day. The clutch is about on average 12. With my studies, I saw anywhere between like 8 and 14 eggs. So she's laying one egg a day and she's laying 14 eggs. That's 2 weeks of investment before she even starts incubating. Then those eggs have to be incubated for 23 days before they hatch. So we're talking a month and a week, you know, that these eggs are sitting in one spot. They have to be protected. So they need that tall grass. Once those eggs hatch, then the chicks have to have grass that they can move through to get the insects that they need, but also have clumps of thick grass so that they can, you know, hide if a predator comes by. So I'd say for brood rearing, I always say it's like about 50% grass, you know, a nicely grazed pasture. So they need all these habitats. And yeah, they're obviously not getting all these habitats if we're seeing the declines. If we look at greater prairie chickens, I had some stats here from KDWP. I'll pull them up here. So greater prairie chickens, and KDWP, the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks in Kansas, does a great job at monitoring both lesser and greater prairie chicken populations. They do these aerial surveys where they're flushing the birds and counting them. In 2015, you know, that's not too long ago. In 2015, they estimated that there were about 86,874 prairie chickens in Kansas. 2021, there's only 58,000. So about a 30% loss just since 2015 for greater prairie chickens. Lesser prairie chickens, in Kansas, we can be hopeful about lesser prairie chickens in Kansas. They seem to be stable in Kansas, but they're declining drastically in Colorado, Oklahoma, Texas, and New Mexico. So of the approximately 40,000 lesser prairie chickens there are in the world, 25,000 of those are in Kansas. Now, the threats to prairie chickens are diverse. So lesser prairie chickens, it's not so much woody encroachment. Woody encroachment is one of the major threat for greater prairie chickens. You think about the Flint Hills and the places where you're just describing. The woods is just, eastern red cedar is just growing up everywhere. And the sand hills of Nebraska, eastern red cedar is a major threat to greater prairie chickens. Lesser prairie chickens, It's more about quality and quantity of grass, you know, making sure that they have that thick grass. And in Kansas, we've done a pretty good job at putting CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program, turning agricultural lands back into grass. So they have nesting habitats, and we've done pretty good. And that's why we have a stable population in Kansas. But both greater and lesser prairie chickens are being threatened by energy developments, both oil and gas and industrial wind. If you overlay the map of the greatest wind resources with prairie chicken range, there's a lot of overlap. And so, you know, here at Audubon of Kansas, we realize that we need clean energy in order to reduce our carbon footprint. But we want to make sure that we aren't putting turbines in the remaining tall grass. We've lost so much of our tall grass prairie, and we want to make sure that we put it in places that don't threaten prairie chickens. So yeah, and you know, to add to this is that like 98% of prairie chicken habitat is on private lands. And so it's not like we have big preserves that we can manage for this species. We have to convince landowners that what's good for the prairie chicken is also good for them. And luckily, that seems to be true with cattle grazing. I mean, most of the land that prairie chickens are on are cattle grazed ranch lands. And so if you're, you know, managing your cattle grazed ranch lands to remove cedars, which would take away grass from the cattle, and you're managing so that you can have, you know, good grass every year and doesn't get too short and doesn't get too long, you know, it's a good situation for the prairie chickens. And so I always want to, you know, emphasize that if you have prairie chickens on your property, you are a great steward of your grass, and you should, you know, not do anything different. Just keep grazing the way you do.
That's really good advice. I was just going to ask, is it easy to get some of these, you know, private landowners on board? Do you guys do like tutorials for some of these folks? Who, like you said, some of the folks you contact don't even know they have prairie chickens on their ground sometimes.
Yeah, if there's a landowner that wants to talk prairie chickens and wants me to visit their property and give them advice on how to, you know, how to improve the habitat for prairie chickens, I would love to do that. Another good resource is your local NRCS office. I mean, the Conservation Reserve programs and the EQIP programs that help, you know, keep your land and grass. And, you know, there's a lot of great programs out there. So if you can't get a hold of me, your local NRCS office has a lot of resources as well.
There is just so much to digest about prairie chickens. I have like 100 questions in my head. I'm sure I will shoot you an email with at some point in the future. But do you somehow think that the prairie chicken, you know, especially on the Great Plains, is somehow, and let's just talk Kansas, right? Let's talk Kansas, is somehow playing, you know, second fiddle to some of these other recognized birds, you know, quail, pheasant, turkeys? You know, I feel like we always get excited about turkey season, right? We just talked about that, but it's very rare that I hear people say it's prairie chicken season, or, you know, we get to go watch the mating season. I hardly ever hear about that.
Well, we're trying to change that at Audubon of Kansas. That's why we're having the prairie chicken festivals, to increase the awareness and just the fascinating aspects of this species out in the Great Plains. And yeah, I think spring is the time for prairie chickens, and it's, you know, I think the other species are maybe, you know, turkeys you can see at a distance and you can see year round, but I think prairie chickens, you know, hide, and they're a little bit more secretive, and so they're more challenging and maybe not as obvious as some of the other species.
Yeah, I just keep chuckling to myself as I think, man, that's a lot of work these males go through to get a date. And then it's a lot of work that those mamas go through.
Yeah, it is. You know, these birds are, you know, I always say that birds are working so hard. They want to be on our landscapes. We just have to allow them to be.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, well, Jackie, if you're up for it, we'll do some lightning round. I've got 8 questions here that I'll just fire at you, and it's kind of this or that, one or the other. And it can be, you know, if you can expand on it however you feel. You know, we sometimes have guests saying, wait, that's not fair. And kind of got to expand a little bit. So it's all in good fun. But if you're up for it, let's give it a shot.
Let's do it.
Okay. Ah. So question number 1, short grass or tall grass prairie?
Both.
Okay. Question number 2, upland bird watching or wetland bird watching?
Well, if you can't tell by this talk, I'm all about the upland.
Yep. Okay.
I'm all about the grouse.
I figured that was going to be the answer, but I thought maybe we would dive onto this whole thing that you were like, oh, quivira and the wetland birds and all of a sudden. So anyway.
That's for the next talk. I'll be excited about them next time.
There you go.
Okay. Fair enough. Number 3, and I think you've answered this, and I wasn't aware of what you explained as far as going out in the morning and the pre-dawn and that type of thing. So observing booming birds, AM or PM?
AM, definitely.
Okay.
They're much more reliable. I mean, during the peak of the breeding season, they will display in the evenings, but it's not reliable. And I don't think the intensity of the display and aggression it's not as intense. And so the morning, and especially getting out there and seeing that clear sky and all the stars, morning is definitely the time to go.
Awesome. Okay. Number 4, and I suppose this relates more to my experience pursuing prairie chickens, because as a prairie chicken hunter, maybe I'm just not good at it, but it seems like you're going to put a lot of miles on a pair of boots for an opportunity at one chicken. And I like to hunt them with my bird dog. And, you know, it could be 3 or 4 outings and multiple miles before we ever flush a chicken within shotgun range. So question 4 is the pursuit of chickens and whether that, you know, if that's for viewing or hunting or whatever, hiking boots, horseback, or like an ATV or a vehicle on the prairie.
I'd say hiking boots and a blind, because I can show you prairie chicken pretty reliably in the spring, in pre-dawn. So, okay. But yeah, hunting is a whole different animal.
Sure. Okay. Number 5, just in general, doesn't have to be just around prairie chickens, but in general, your favorite time of year between these two, spring or the fall on the prairie?
I am very predictable. Spring and the prairie chickens. And I also love the intense storms that come through. I know it's scary to my parents in Wisconsin, but you know, I just love the whole, you know, being out there, seeing the chickens, seeing the sandhill cranes migrate over, seeing everything come back to life. I love spring.
Okay.
And it smells great.
You know, our pastor Sunday at church said that he felt like he was, or it was the worship pastor, said he felt like he was being sponsored by Benadryl lately.
No kidding.
Number 6. So you have the opportunity to observe prairie chickens, but you've got to pick an area, lesser prairie chickens or greater prairie chickens?
Western Kansas, where you have both. You know, if you only can see one species, just make the effort to see the species. I tend to like greater prairie chickens a little bit better. They just go at a slower pace, and whereas the lesser prairie chickens, I just feel like they're always running around, they're spastic, they're just like little hyper things that aren't very relaxing to watch.
Fair enough. Number 7, and we didn't talk about this, so I don't know if you're a hunter or not, but number 7 is Are you going to carry a shotgun or a camera?
I'm not a hunter and I don't trust myself with a shotgun. So camera, but I would love to go out and see the dogs run. I mean, I think that is probably something that's pretty darn cool to see the dogs run and see them point on a chicken. And what I just can't imagine hunting chickens because they flush up and they zig left and they zig right. I mean, it's not like a pheasant that just kind of flies away from you. You must be pretty good if you ever get a chicken.
Okay. Well, we'll have to make some arrangements for this fall, and that opens in September, and we'll make something happen.
And, yeah, I'd love that.
So yeah. Number eight, the last question. So I wanted a bird question apart from prairie chickens. So if you were to study a different type of bird apart from the prairie chickens on the Great Plains, and you had the choice between birds of prey or waterfowl, which one would you choose?
Those are tough, because I'd probably choose birds of prey, because I really don't like, you study waterfowl, you get into the muck of the mud and the mosquitoes and the whereas birds of prey, they'd be upland, they'd be lower densities, so you wouldn't see as many. I really think if I wasn't studying prairie chickens that I might study dung beetles. I mean, I really love how they roll those little dung balls and push them across. It's just hilarious. Anyway.
I love that you said that, because I have a good friend whose daughter just did her dissertation over dung beetles. And I remember when he told me about this, I said, she did her what on what?
Oh my gosh, I need to talk to her.
Fascinating. Yeah, I will certainly connect you guys. It's so cool. I love that.
I don't know much about them, but I love seeing their little round balls push across the mirror.
Well, that's hilarious. Jackie, where do listeners find you guys at the Audubon of Kansas? How can they look for you, search for you, engage you guys? I feel like you have so much to offer folks, not just about prairie chickens, just about so much more that could be really beneficial for our state.
Yeah, you should definitely check out our website. It's audubonofkansas.org, and you have to spell that all out. So it's A-U-D as in dog, U-B as in boy, O-N-O-F-K-A-N-S-A-S.org. And if you spend any time on there, there's a little pop-up box that, you know, we just ask for your name and email address, and then you'll get newsletters from us once a month, so you'll get updates on about what we're doing. We're also on Facebook. And of course, you can always become a member and get our magazine mailed to your house. So we'd appreciate you learning more about us.
I love that.
And you mentioned, what did you call it? So there's a festival, some sort of gathering in Hayes.
Yeah, we have a prairie chicken festival. This year is our first annual prairie chicken festival. It's going to be April 7th to the 10th. We've closed registration for this year, but next year, if you want to see a prairie chicken from a blind, and you come on out. And so that website is Kansas Lektrex, KansasLektrex.org. And find out information about what we're doing this year and plan for coming out next year.
Awesome. I always like the idea of the trust that you've put in yourself and your group to say, this is our first annual, right? Like, we're going to do it again because it's going to be a success. I like that. So, are you planning to continue to have that in Hayes? Is that going to travel around? Have you gotten there yet?
We're planning to keep it in Hayes because it's the only part of the state where you can see both greater and lesser prairie chickens. And this year we're having, we have 90 participants coming from 25 different states.
Wow.
And so to see both species is really something that's worthwhile. And so, yeah, it's definitely see both species as really a treat that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, you could sell some major seats for that kind of opportunity. I mean, I just think of how many people I could call right now and they'd be there in a heartbeat. That's awesome. I hope all of
us. It sells out quick. Yeah, it sells out quick and registration opens in December. So
wow,
watch for it.
We are on it. We will make sure to post a link in the podcast when it comes out.
Excellent.
Jackie, if there's one thing you had to leave with our listeners with, what would it be? What's the one thing you want everyone to take home from this episode?
That prairie chickens are worth it. They're worth investing the time to learn more about them. They're worth investing the time in early morning to go see them in a lek. I haven't hunted them, but I'm sure they're worth the miles that you walk and the challenge it is to hunt them. And I think that they are just worth protecting our prairies for. And so that's the take home. Just prairie chickens are worth it.
That's very cool. I see a sticker or a decal or a t-shirt. Prairie chickens are worth it. That's cool.
I love it. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for joining us today. I learned so much. I know our listeners are going to learn so much and just really appreciate it, especially in such a timely manner as mating season is among us with the prairie chickens.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jackie. Appreciate it. And all those listeners out there, be sure and share this episode with your friends. Tell them about the Great Plains podcast, send them a link, and be sure and go check out Audubon of Kansas.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Jackie. We'll see you guys later.
See ya.
Bye.